You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org. Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreeslein. Very happy to be with you. A couple good guests coming at you a little bit later. We'll talk about this being Stream Trout Opener weekend here in the state, the regular opener where you can keep a few fish if you want. Dean Perrone from the Minnesota DNR will join us to talk about that. We'll have Tony Jones with us. Tony was just out a week or two ago in the Dakotas. There was a lot of snow out there still where he was. He hit a snowstorm. He also hit a snowstorm of light geese, got out there and hunted the spring snow goose season. We'll talk to Tony about that a little bit. Tim Lesmester here to help me kick off the show. We'll talk news this segment. And then the end of the show, we'll talk about my trip to England. Tim has spent a lot of time in the UK also, so we will talk about my trip over there last week. Looking forward to chatting about that. So, Tim, welcome. Good to see you. And as we were talking off air, a lot of news locally to talk about. I did catch the Duck Summit right before I left that was down in Nicolet, so you and I didn't get to talk about that last week. They had a good crowd. More than 300 people attended that event.
Yeah, and the thing about ducks that I always find, I don't even find it unusual, I find it's kind of entertaining, is that somebody can always find a reason to whine, moan, cry, howl, scream, and just get completely excited about the direction that duck hunting goes. It could be the numbers, it could be the habitat. Well, a lot of times it's the seasons. Why do we have these early seasons? Why do they even let you shoot any hens? So it's kind of nice to see a group get together, in this case, for a duck summit, so that they can literally yell at each other all in one room.
Well, I think it tended to be the guys who attended this tended to be a little older, and they mostly agreed with each other, I think, on a lot of things. These are the guys that don't like things like the youth waterfowl weekend. They don't like the two-hen mallard limit. They don't like the early teal season. Dennis Anderson's been writing about these items in the Star Tribune. He kind of has represented a lot of them, and he was really the driving force behind at least getting this Duck Summit going. And then you had guys like Dave Zentner and Jim Cox who put it together. There was a lot of good presentations. The idea was, let's get a lot of data together here and listen, and then we'll vote on how we feel about some of these things. And I don't think, even though you had folks like Dr. Todd Arnold pointing out that duck populations are not severely impacted by hunter harvest, that there's other factors that are impacting, the populations of teal and mallards. I don't know that swayed too many opinions. And I don't know that it sways my opinion personally. I still think we should take conservation measures to try to help out declining numbers of ducks. I don't think there's any doubt people are seeing fewer birds migrating through the state. And you can't argue. We've got fewer waterfowl hunters. And, I mean, less than half of what we had when I started at Outdoor News in the late 1990s. And that's driven, I think, largely in part by the experience people are having when they go duck hunting.
It's getting harder and harder to find places to duck hunt because we're losing habitat.
Yeah.
But the beautiful thing about Minnesota is we have a lot of waterfowl production areas. You can hunt there. And then Dakotas. But, you talk about the early seasons. You talk about the two-hen harvest. And a lot of this stuff that they're doing today is so they can try and recruit more hunters. And the thing about it is you have to ask, is it working? Are we recruiting more hunters? No, the population keeps dropping. So I always say, if you have good grouse numbers, if you have good pheasant numbers, if you have good duck goose numbers, whatever the species is, you're going to have a lot of hunters buying licenses because they know it's going to be a banner year. So that's why I think that really the focus for ducks should be basically, let's get habitat. Let's do what we can to create more habitat. And that'll create more ducks and that will create more hunters. That's the way I feel.
Yeah, I totally agree. That, of course, takes a lot of work and a lot of money to pull that off. And that's why it's so important that we have things like the Legacy Outdoor Heritage Fund from the Legacy account to accomplish some of that. Tim, they took some real-time surveys. You could vote on your phone during this thing, and I voted on a few things too. And I think you'll find this interesting. There were four items that Roy Heilman reported in the Outdoor News story regarding the results of some of these surveys. And the first one was, did folks think we should go back to a one-hen mallard limit instead of two? 76% of the folks at the Duck Summit agreed with that. I strongly agree with that. I think it's ridiculous you can shoot two hen mallards. I think everybody should get a mistake bird. That's fine. But I don't know anyone, I guess there were 24% who agreed with it, but I don't know anyone who's ever clamored for a two-hen mallard limit. How do you feel about that?
I think it should be, if you shoot a hen mallard, you're done. You're done shooting that day. And I think it should be for each hunter. So I think that instead of allowing each hunter one hen, then they'll shoot. The first group of ducks that come in, there's five guys out in ground blinds. They'll shoot as many as they can, and then they'll count them, and they'll go, oh, we've got four hens. We can shoot one more. No, that's wrong. That is wrong. You shoot drakes and drakes only, and if you accidentally drop a hen, that's your one. You're done hunting. That'd be my rule.
Yeah, I'm all for the mistake bird, so I'm with each other on that. They asked if we should eliminate the early teal season, and 70% said yes. I guess a lot of these old guys are not partaking in that early teal season. I don't know how I feel about that. I if you want to shoot teal in Minnesota, you kind of need an early teal season. Dr. Todd Arnold says it's not impacting teal numbers. I'll let you chime in.
The reason they don't want that early teal season is because they're afraid it's pushing all the local ducks.
Right.
And they don't want those ducks gone when they go out to hunt during the regular season. I can understand it, but I don't agree with it. I think they should be able to have these early hunters should be able to have an early teal season, as far as I'm concerned. And then, I'd say if you're not hunting it, you should. It's a lot of fun.
And then they felt pretty much the same way about the youth waterfowl season. 66% said get rid of that. I mean, go figure, given the demographic of the guys at this event. Presumably some of them have grandkids, but I guess they figure, well, I'll take my grandkids hunting during the regular season. And then this one, Tim, was kind of fun. Kind of funny. The one that would really impact anyone, regardless of age, they said, how do you feel about a shorter season going from 60 days to 40 days? Only 28% like that idea. I don't know. That result kind of cracked me up.
Well, they should say, we're going to give a 40-day season to everybody that's under 60. And then anybody over 60 can have that last 20 days.
There you go. Yeah.
But you know what? The problem with the season in Minnesota, and I don't know if they talked about this at the Duck Summit, is that it's too early and it ends too soon. They started too early and ended too soon. There's so many ducks that come over Minnesota long after the season closes. And I think that's one of the biggest problems we have now with shooting some of these Canadian ducks, is that we don't have a season when that time period hits.
Well, and there's a lot of anger down south that those birds are not, they're not going down south at all anymore. Those southern duck hunters in Louisiana and Texas are not seeing as many birds, and they're all worked up about that. And it's all for the same reasons. I mean, it's just not getting cold enough in Canada early enough to push those birds south. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister kicking off the show. Another one final quick item on ducks, Tim. Low water out west remains a theme. I was talking to Ron Spolmer earlier today. He said that I believe he's in Idaho, how dry it is out there. It looks like it's going to be another tough year on the prairies and in the western U.S. for water conditions.
I think all over the country, anything that needs water right now is going to be hurting. Fortunately, Minnesota has a lot of lakes. They're all going to be low. I think the loon population is going to do just fine. But other than that, you're going to see the ducks really hurting because of that.
Before we break, Tim, a couple dates to remember this coming week. This Wednesday, the A season for turkey hunting kicks off. The 2026 season begins. I think everybody's pretty optimistic about that. And then MinFish has got its annual summit this Friday, the 17th, out in Alexandria. Eric Morgan is going to cover that for Outdoor News. They were in Grand Rapids with that event last year. MinFish doing some good work out there for fishing.
That's open to the public, by the way.
Yes, I mean, it is.
Go to that. So
they ask folks to pre-register, but
yeah, you got to register. But the bottom line is if you're interested in making sure that the Minnesota fishing resources stay as a top priority within the legislative body here, you should attend that MinFish summit. That's, and there's going to be Al Linder's kicking it off as a featured speaker, and Ron Shera says he's going to be there. He had a nice little piece in this week's print edition.
Yeah.
And you see that?
Ron's just kind of grumpy in his column these days, isn't he?
Whining, moaning, howling, crying. I love Ron. And, you know, but he gets things done, and that's the beautiful thing. So, and so does MinFish. So check it out.
All right, Tim, you'll stick around, circle back at the end of the show. We'll talk about my trip across the pond.
Absolutely.
All right, cool. That was Tim Lesmeister. We're going to break. I think we'll talk stream trout fishing when we return. Don't go away. More Outdoor News Radio after these messages. For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle inertia plus rotating bolt and factory length enforcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20-gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Spring coho and steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Unleash the power of the Onyx Hunt app this turkey season and see how it'll become one of the best tools in your turkey vest. Use color-coded public and private land ownership information, tree species, and crop layers to scout from the comfort of your home. Then hit the field using compass mode, waypoints, and multiple base maps to help pin down more gobblers this spring. Use promo code ODN20 to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again. Then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreisein. Thanks a lot for tuning in to the broadcast. We've got Stream Trout Opener Weekend underway. It's the official kickoff to fishing our cold water species around the state. And, you know, some of that prime fishing is really just getting going. We've talked about it a little bit on this show the past several weeks, the fact that this weekend was coming up. But we didn't really get the official word from anyone from the Minnesota DNR. And I thought, now might be a good time to do that and check in with Dean Perrone. He is the Stream Habitat Supervisor for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and I appreciate him carving out a few minutes now. Dean, thanks a lot for doing this. Are you a fairly avid trout advocate yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me today, Rob. I grew up fishing a lot, but I wasn't really exposed to stream trout fishing until my college days when I had the great opportunity to work for a professor named Dr. Tom Waters. A lot of people may be familiar with his books. And as a graduate student and in college, I fell in love with trout streams and trout fishing and have been an advocate for trout fishing my whole entire career and just love it. And I always look forward to this time of year when I can get back to the streams.
Just a complete aside here, you know, in films and movies, TVs, I see trout fishing so often depicted poorly. The actors, the writing, the syntax, they just, no one seems to really have it down. But you know what? I saw a little bit snippet of a TV show the other day called The Madison. I watched the opening scene and I was shocked. Kurt Russell and I forget who the other actor was. They did a bang up job of talking about nymphing and caddis hatch. And Kurt Russell's technique wasn't very good. It was very clear to me that he wasn't holding the rod correctly and his partner called him out. I thought, wow, you don't see that very often in media where they actually get it pretty accurate. And I would tip my hat to that program real quick. Sorry to go off on a tangent there. Back to trout fishing in Minnesota. We've got a lot of places to fish trout. We all associate it with the southeastern portion of the state. We probably should talk about that first, but there are other areas too. Again, why is southeast Minnesota seem to be custom built for trout fishing?
Southeast Minnesota is a great place to take up trout fishing and explore. Right now, the populations are very good. It's in their driftless area, so it's glacially different, and it has a lot of streams that have natural groundwater influence. And so these streams stay very stable throughout the year and allow our trout to do very well there. Populations have been very good recently. A lot of streams. We spent a lot of time investing in conservation angling easements in that part of the state to give anglers access to a lot of the premier trout fishing on private land, as well as state parks, and some of the county lands offer good fishing as well. There's a lot of availability for fishing in the area and very good housely populations and a variety of species to fish for as well. But you're correct. We have some trout fishing opportunities throughout the state, which is very fun to explore as well.
Let's talk a little bit about that access program in the Southeast. It's something I haven't talked about on this broadcast in a long time. Ron Payer, I don't know if you remember Ron, former fisheries chief. Man, it's been 20 years now. I remember him telling me that in his early days, was one of his first jobs was to go out and try to buy easements along some of those streams in the Southeast to provide access for anglers. He said that was pretty gratifying work when you could secure, you know, a mile or two of access so anglers could go and reach that water for fishing. It means just that, the private landowners have been paid to provide so that anglers can walk along those stream sides and fish, correct? How can anglers find those access points?
That's a great question, Rob, and you're correct on how these angling easements work. We have a couple resources. If you go on the DNR's website, you can check out Stream Finder, and it's an interactive map that helps you locate various streams, and on there it will show where easements are located. We also have a trout opportunities booklet for Southeast Minnesota and Central Minnesota that's available through most of the area offices, or you can write the central office, and state parks and other DNR facilities carry these books as well that have a map of various sections of the Southeast that on there also identify where these stream easements are located.
When we were talking about fishing opportunities down in the Southeast, you said it's particularly good right now. Why are trout populations in really solid shape in that part of the state? Because it hasn't always happened that I've interviewed DNR stream trout people and they've said it's good. Yeah, they over the years there's been ups and downs. Why is it up right now?
I believe recently a lot of it has to do with the changes in hydrology, that our groundwater has been recharged, so to speak, and that we have a lot more stable flows into our streams in the Southeast that provide that constant cool temperatures, cold water temperatures that are very critical for trout. Talking with our area fishery staff, they just have really good numbers right now and have some of the best trout fishing we've had in the Southeast for quite some time.
You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline. We are chatting with Dean Perrone, the Minnesota DNR's stream habitat supervisor, about trout fishing across the state and the fact that this is the regular opener. The emphasis isn't quite as big as it used to be on this weekend because we've got so much winter trout fishing now, right? I mean, that's a phenomenon that's been growing the past 25, 30 years. So a lot of guys have been out fishing already. It's just been strictly catch and release. This is the harvest opener where folks can keep a few fish if they want.
Yeah, this is the quote unquote regular opener where you can still catch and release, but you're also now allowed to harvest trout. And some of our area managers, wanted to emphasize in some of the streams, harvesting fish does help the population. If you're seeing a lot of very small, abundant populations of smaller fish, harvesting a few for dinner is okay. Generally, stream trout fishing is a very heavy ethic on catch and release, but it's okay to harvest a few from our streams. They're in very good, especially with their very good high populations. This weekend allows you the opportunity to enjoy trout fishing however you see it. Explore all the streams and the great fishing opportunities the Southeast has to I would mention, don't overlook the Northeast, except this time of year, most of your streams still are going to be under ice or under snow. So you got a few weeks before you can really get up to the northeastern part of Minnesota and start exploring.
Let's talk about the species of trout that we've got here in Minnesota. Basically three on most of our inland waters, right? We've got the native species, which is brook trout. I believe they're the only native trout or char, correct, on inland waters other than lake trout in the Northeast. And then we've got two that are not from this part of the world that we stock. They're very popular. We've got the magnificent looking rainbow trout, which I believe is originally from Northern California. It's like the most stocked species around the world. And then we've got brown trout, which are from Europe. They both grow larger and immensely popular among anglers.
Yeah, brook trout are native species, are very popular among some anglers that because of the uniqueness of them being native to Minnesota and this landscape, we've been focusing on restocking streams with what we call heritage brook trout, or Minnesota native trout that have the genetics of native fish in native brook trout in Minnesota. So they've been stocked the last few years, are now at a catchable size. Brown trout, as you mentioned, from Europe have naturalized. There are a lot of streams where they're naturally reproducing and are wild and also are a angler favorite. They have ability to tolerate a little bit more warmer temperature sometimes than brook trout, so can occupy a greater length of stream and therefore also grow larger just because they have the ability to withstand slightly warmer temperatures and often can get to a larger size than the brook trout. And then rainbows are pretty much, with a few exceptions, are maintained through stocking, but are very good species to raise in a hatchery. You can raise them pretty quickly to a catchable size. And so putting them in like city ponds and streams near urban areas is a great way to provide a stream trout fishery that may lack a natural reproducing fish, but has the characteristics to hold fish for a while and provide a fishery. So generally, if you're catching a brook trout, it's most likely a native or recently stocked native strain brook trout, brown trout. We still have a stocking program on a smaller degree, but a lot of those are naturally produced. And rainbows, they've come from a hatchery, but also very fun to catch and a good species to harvest because they're meant to be put and take.
And then, you mentioned steelhead. Those are actually rainbow trout that spend their lives in the big lake, and then they spawn in rivers, and they grow larger than our rainbow trout will down in southeastern Minnesota. Like you say, they're still kind of under ice. That's still to come. But there's trout fishing in other parts of the state, right? Is that mostly brook trout, or are there browns and rainbows stocked central Minnesota and all the way up into the northern part of the state on inland waters?
Yeah, there's a scattering of trout streams throughout Minnesota. The best way to find them is like either through Stream Finder or checking with your local area offices. The Northeast has a large populations across the Northeast of native brook trout. There's a few streams as you get closer to Duluth that have brown trout and a few rainbows. Primarily the Upper North Shore, Northeast Minnesota, it's wild brook trout. They tend to become pretty active in late May to early June, offer some great wilderness type of fishing. The streams up in the North Shore are often very low productivity, so they don't get very big sometimes, but there's great numbers and they're very naive to a lot of fishing pressure, so they're often very easy to catch and just offer a great opportunity that not a lot of people partake as, like in, say, the southeast portions of the state, or maybe towards Bemidji, the Strait River, which hosts a very nice population of brown trout. But it's definitely worth checking out, especially if you're exploring the area. Most of the cold water streams hold at least a population of brook trout.
Thank you for your time, Dean. A lot of great information there. If folks want more information, mndnr.gov and search trout fishing or stream finder. Get out and take advantage of this great resource. Dean, thanks again, and have a good spring.
Thank you.
That was Dean Perrone. He is the Minnesota DNR Stream Habitat Supervisor. Don't go away. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the Squirrel Woods to Deer Camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
You fish the same waters year after year. But what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand, when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein with you for another segment. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you like the content of the broadcast, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our print or digital versions there. Hey, a friend who has not been with us in over a year is going to join us now. He was recently hunting out in, we'll call it the Dakota Territory, double secret probation kind of stuff here, folks. It's our friend Tony Jones. He's also known as the Reverend Hunter. He's got a website, reverendhunter.com. You can also read his Substack account. Hey, Tony, how you doing?
Rob, great to be with you, man. I'm doing great.
You know, we talk a lot about snow goose hunting in February as prior to the season. It's getting pretty late. I think the season in Minnesota technically goes till the end of the month. A lot of the birds have already blown through. But you got out and hunted one of the Dakotas. You were hunting kind of a private area that you've been sworn to secrecy.
That's right.
But nonetheless, snow goose hunting is still open, and you were just out there less than 2 weeks ago. So it looked like from your pictures, you hit. Did a snowstorm hit right before you got there?
Yeah. I mean, a snowstorm hit while we were there, Rob, and I learned so – it was my first time snow goose hunting, and what I was told is that we were actually hunting the leading edge of the birds.
Okay.
And because, again, this was news to me, but the birds we were shooting were adult birds. They were not juvenile birds. Mm-hmm. And what I learned being out there – I mean, I'm sure a bunch of your listeners know this already, but – the adult birds are the breeding birds. They go first, and sure. The juvenile birds are not in any rush to get mm-hmm. to the Arctic. So they are on the tail end because they don't breed the first year. So we were shooting mature birds, and we got out there, and it was a blue sky day, but then it snowed 6 inches overnight. And so our best day of hunting, we caught a reverse migration as the geese are coming down south looking for,
wow.
you know, looking for green space. That they've already flown past it because everything was green, but then everything turned white, so they came back south.
Yeah, they follow the ice line up. They need access to some open water. So yeah. They follow ice. They follow the snow line. So that's interesting. And that happens if you follow snow goose hunting in the spring, that migration kind of bounces north and south as the weather changes. So it's interesting. You saw that in real time.
Oh, yeah. We saw waves and waves of birds coming down south because it was snowing north of us. There was a uh-huh. big snow squall north of us, and all up through Saskatchewan, Manitoba, there was a huge snowstorm. And so these birds were hightailing it back south looking for fields where they could, you know, scratch out some food.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And I will just say this. It wasn't just that. It wasn't just snow geese. But it was Canada geese. It was white-fronted geese. And we saw tens of thousands of mallards and pintails as well. It was just, it was like out of a National Geographic or a David Attenborough TV show or something.
So I've hunted snow geese a couple times in the fall. And I've said the first couple hours, there is almost no greater spectacle in North America than hunting snow geese and you got sandhill cranes and all that sort mm-hmm. of activity overhead. And it's just absolutely breathtaking. Then it starts to get frustrating as you try to decoy the birds. And it's like, okay, it gets a little old watching these beautiful flocks go over just outside of shooting range.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you probably experienced something similar.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I was with a couple younger guys who are maybe a little quicker on the trigger and we're doing a little sky blasting to begin with. And I'm like, well, that's not going to work because, you know, we're shooting steel and BB load. And you got to, you know, geese are tough.
Yeah.
Geese are tough. And
they're
so
smart.
One of the more enjoyable aspects for me is always hunting with my dog. So the fact that we did have a couple sailors, you know, you hit a bird at take kind of a long shot and you're like, I swear I hit that bird. Well, keep an eye on it. And then, you know, it flies a quarter mile and then you see it drop and
right.
you're like, oh, well, let's go get the dogs out of the truck and go find that bird. And
yeah.
so that there was a little satisfaction in that. But as I wrote for you in the Outdoor News, you can put out a spread of 2,000 or 3,000, you know, wind socks and decoys and spinners, and we've got the squawking loudspeakers going, you know, the electronic calls. There's just no holds barred in this spring goose hunt, this conservation order goose hunt. But still, you do all that, and if there's 10,000 geese in a field a quarter mile away, well, in my little, you know, write up for the Outdoor News, I was like, the metaphor I used was like, let's say you're flying an airplane and you look down and there's the Minneapolis St. Paul Lindbergh terminal, and then there's a little you know, dirt strip in a cornfield. Which are you going to land in? Well,
yeah, that's what you're competing against. You know, those
yeah,
birds
exactly.
those birds are looking down. Why would they go and mess with your little quote unquote little? It's probably a huge decoy spread, but it can't compete with 10,000 birds
right
sitting safely on a wetland somewhere nearby a quarter mile away. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Driesine chatting with our friend Tony Jones. You can read what he's all about at reverendhunter.com, or as he's alluded to, he's written about his snow goose hunting experience coming up in this week's edition of Outdoor News. This spring conservation order has been around for, man, more than 25 years now. There might be people listening saying, Keith, you can hunt birds in the spring? Only these light geese. You mentioned you saw Canada geese. You saw mallards. You saw other ducks. You can't shoot at them. You can't even shoot at the speckle belly, the white fronts.
Right.
It's just the light goose. It's the snow geese and the Ross's goose that are overabundant on their breeding grounds. And they're very challenging to hunt because you talked about those adult birds that are leading the edge of the migration. Some of those birds are 15, 20 years old.
They've learned that.
Yeah, they got, you know, going north and south, they've got a couple dozen migration routes under their belts where they've seen every possible decoy spread. They're really tough to fool.
They're super smart, and they've, you know, there's this aspect of the animal kingdom that you see maybe when you see antelope running on the Serengeti or something, or you see herring in the ocean, murmuration, where a massive amount of some kind of animal move as though they have like a shared consciousness, you know, and these light geese, these snow geese are like that. They don't fly like you see Canada geese in the V where there's a leader up front and the rest are following it. They're more in this kind of weird group, but they move, you know, they swoop left and they swoop right as a group. And then, you know, you've seen this if you've been out there, you'll have 10 or 20,000 geese in a field and they will just all of a sudden, there's no predator, there's no coyote hasn't run onto the field. For who knows why, because of their murmuration, shared consciousness, they all just get up and fly. They just get up and fly. And they fly a mile, and then they like tornado down into another field where they eat. It's unbelievable.
Tony, while you were out there, was there any chatter about the status of the snow goose populations? Of course, when the season originally started a quarter century ago, they were way overabundant. That's why the hunt exists.
No, surprisingly, but I think it's probably because when you're out there, you're just seeing thousands and thousands, like as far as the eye can see in the skies, wave after wave after wave of geese, you know. But when I got home, I read a story in Ducks Unlimited magazine from 2025 that said the population is precipitously dropping from its high of like about 15 million. They've been destroying the tundra grass and turning it into dead mud flats, and they're just eating themselves out of habitat.
Yeah, I don't think it's hunting pressure that's reduced their population. It's help. That was the idea. And that's why we've got these liberal seasons with liberal limits, and you can use electronic calls and you can have more than three shells in your shotgun. Mm-hmm. But it'll be curious to see if maybe the feds in Canada decide if the population's dropped enough that maybe we need to take that pressure off. It's very popular in some areas. I think there's some guide business that they build a lot of revenue around that spring hunt.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that. But we didn't really see other hunters. You know, Rob, it's a hard hunt. As I wrote for the Outdoor News, it's the only kind of hunting I've really ever done where I know that I could not do it alone. First of all, I don't have thousands and thousands of decoys in a trailer.
Right.
I can see why most people use guides. It's not something that you could DIY it.
No, absolutely not. It's also got a reputation as kind of a muddy hunt. Did you encounter a lot of mud?
I mean, what hunting isn't muddy, Rob?
Well, I mean, it's spring and the crops and a lot of the residue is gone. So,
yeah.
And spring tends to be wetter.
Yeah, that's true. We got stuck. We did get stuck in the mud in a wheat field, and we had to get towed out and unhook the trailer, get the trailer towed out, and then we had to get towed out. But it wasn't any mud. I mean, I've been on muddier duck hunts for sure. Yeah, but it does have that reputation. I was warned by some people like, oh, it's real muddy.
You did get some birds. Have you cooked them up yet? Have you tried any snow goose recipes?
I saved all the gizzards and livers, and I made a wild goose liver pate.
Nice.
And that turned out great. And I think I'm going to this weekend grind up some breast meat with some pork fat and make some sausages. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I did the crock pot thing with a lot of snow goose breast, and it was just fine. My family.
Just fine. I was told by one guy to do that with the legs, and you crock pot them till they're not quite totally cooked, but they're getting soft. And then you dip them in barbecue sauce, throw them on the grill for just a couple seconds on each side, and then you can just eat them right off the bone. So
yeah, some people say they don't like geese or they don't like snow geese, but I thought my family, we liked it. Now, if you got invited back on this double secret probation Dakota Territory hunt, would you do it again, Tony?
I would do it again, and I would turn on Find My Location for everyone could track me on my phone and see where I
It'll be our secret. Hey, before we let you go, you've got a paperback version of your book, God of Wild Places, coming out. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's coming out in May. You can order it right now on Amazon, the paperback version. If you know, I'm sure so many people out there were like, I'd like to buy that book, but I want to save a couple bucks. Well, now you can, because it's in paperback.
There you go. details at reverendhunter.com. You can also access Tony's Substack account through reverendhunter.com, or again, search Amazon for the God of Wild Places paperback version. You said May it will be out, huh?
Coming out next month. Yep.
Well, Tony, thanks for spending a segment with me. Congrats on a great outdoor opportunity. I mean, that is an incredible spectacle. I'd encourage anyone to go watch.
I'm
that
so glad I got
migration.
To see it. Yeah.
It's really... All right. Well, thanks. Have
thanks
a good
for having
ahead.
Me.
Yep. Take care. That's our buddy, Tony Jones. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Spring coho and steelhead are on, and Kins is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188, or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
For those walking the turkey woods this spring, carry a Bold Retay Gobbler shotgun. Top options include the Gordian Turkey Gun with its no-rattle inertia plus rotating bolt and factory length enforcing cone, which delivers 20% more pellets. Or the Gamelander Turkey Single Shot, available in 410 and 20 gauge in black and mossy oak bottomland with its airy recoil reduction pad. Find a dealer locator at RetayUSA.com. That's RetayUSA.com. Be the Retay difference.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Minnesota, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Like every serious angler in this region, I want to make the most of my time on the water. That's why I read OutdoorNews.com. This all-new digital resource is loaded with valuable tips, lake profiles, up-to-date fishing reports, gear reviews, and breaking news on laws and regulations that affect the sports we love. Plus, OutdoorNews.com will help you catch more and bigger fish. Be prepared and get ahead of the crowd. Join OutdoorNews.com today.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Final segment of this week's broadcast of Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisine. Thanks a lot for tuning in. If you like the content of this program, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. And you can subscribe to our print or digital versions. Tim Lesmeister here to help me wrap up this week's show. And Tim, as we alluded to in the first segment, I got to the UK, the United Kingdom, last week. My oldest son, Logan, got married over there. He's living in the UK right now. He and his then fiance, now his wife, I can't believe I'm saying those words, they're living, going, he's going to school, she's working over there, having a good time. And it was my first trip back to the UK since my honeymoon, Tim, 3 decades ago this month.
Oh wow, that's crazy. Yeah. I really love the UK. I lived over in England in 1997 and 1998, and actually, you know, I took up golf. That's where I took up golf, right? When
really?
I went to England, because that's a huge game over there, and it's actually easier to access a golf course over there than it is to get access fishing waters.
Yeah.
If you want to get on a lake or a creek or a river or a pond, you gotta know somebody. You gotta be in a club, or you got to pay dearly to fish on that water. So I took up golf. I did a lot of fishing when I was over there. I had a friend who was in the Salisbury Trout Club, and I got great stories about fishing the trout over there around Salisbury. It was just a blast. But I really, truly love England, because everywhere you go there's so much character and so much history.
Oh, totally. That's what we were doing after the wedding. We went into Northwest Wales, Isle of Anglesey, I believe it is pronounced. There's all sorts of Neolithic burial chambers and stones and, you know, little mini Stonehenge kind of things that my wife was really interested in seeing. We spent an entire day just bouncing around looking at some of those different sites. And Wales is just full of castles. You can't swing a dead cat in Wales without hitting a castle. Edward the First built, that was the guy that even the Bad King in Braveheart built all these castles to fortify Wales after he took that over before he invaded Scotland. And so just a ton of interesting history. We had a good time. I was driving on the left side. I did that during our honeymoon. I was a little wary about doing it again, but we survived. Not only did the car not get damaged, but my marriage came through it also, which was touch and go, because my wife was all over me as I was driving on the left side.
I put a blindfold on my wife when I'm driving over.
That's a good idea. That's a good
idea. I tried to tape her mouth shut, but she wouldn't let me do that.
Well, I'm gonna
get some people mad at me for that one.
Well, it's totally, I mean, God bless you. I mean, the passenger feels like they're too close.
I know, they do.
To their side, and they complain the whole time.
The lanes are so narrow. Yes,
that too.
And they've got these huge buses and these trucks. That, the semis there, they call them lorries.
Right.
They're huge. And they're going down these little and tiny roads. Some of them are one lane, and they're barely wide enough for you to get your car through.
Yes.
Especially in Wales, where you're up there in northwestern Wales. I mean, those aren't even roads up there. They're paths.
We were on one road in Wales where I was like, man, is this a narrow road? Then we made like three turns, and each turn got onto a progressively more narrow road.
Sure.
Until literally we were on a road where it was the width of the vehicle. This is a two-way road, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually, you know, you would come up to somebody, and one of you would have to back up to like a driveway or something to let the other one through. It's amazing.
And the speed limit is like 50 miles an hour. On those roads.
I think they've gotten a little more restrictive, Tim. I don't know, since the last time you're there. The speed limits were lower than I expected.
I was over there last year, and I spent 5 weeks in England and Scotland last year. I was amazed at some of these roads that were, they're basically two lanes, but they're barely a lane and a half in the United States. And the speed limit's like 50 miles an hour, and you're getting past. I'm doing 30 because I'm thinking, oh, there's no way. Right. I'm doing 50 on this windy road, you know, and you're getting passed by people in spots where you'd think to yourself, we're going to die, because if someone's coming the other direction, there's no way you'd see them.
Oh, and there's the huge hedges, right? So you can't see around a corner until you're right there. I'm surprised there's not more accidents than there are. Maybe there are, and we were just lucky. But anyway, we survived that. You know, wildlife, birding.
I was going to say, didn't you wish you had a shotgun with you?
Well, so we spent time in the cities, of course, and that's all just crows and pigeons and grackles or, you know, whatever. Not a lot of good birds there. Now, we went to a lighthouse overlooking some cliffs, and it was unfortunately a really rainy, foggy day, which it is most of the time, I think, in that area. But there was a ton of shorebirds. I was told there were peregrine falcons in the area. We didn't see much, but on a clear day with a British birding book and a pair of binoculars, that would have been fantastic birding. The other thing you and I traded an email about was I was surprised at the number of ringneck pheasants I saw over there.
Yeah, last year I saw tons of them. It was incredible.
I did a little research. Sounds like ringneck pheasants have been in the UK, you know, since like the Norman times in the late, you know, 10th, 11th century. So that's not new. But so I was surprised. I saw some pheasants. I would like to go back and hunt red stag over there. Honestly, I did a little research after I got home. I don't know that shooting a red stag over there would be that much more expensive than an elk hunt in a lot of our western states now, as expensive as that has gotten. So my son is going to be in the UK for a while. Maybe I'll get over there and try to bag a red stag. You got a line on any of that, Tim? Any of your sources?
I can check some out. Most of the big game over there is that I know, people I know are in Switzerland and France.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisine and Tim Lesmeister recapping my recent trip across the pond. I got over to England last week, had a great time, and, you know, tried to incorporate at least, you know, monitoring the landscape for the outdoor sorts of issues and topics that we talk about here. I saw a little item in a newspaper over there that they're trying to reestablish crane populations. Common cranes had been extinct in the UK for 400 years. Count them. That goes back to like the Jamestown era here. That's how long common cranes have been gone, but they're up to like 85, 86 pairs. So they got a long way to go, even to have as many whooping cranes as we've got here in North America. But so there are some conservation efforts cooking over there.
That's good. It's funny, when I first moved over to England back in the late 90s, it was kind of interesting because the fish that we value over here, the trout,
right,
and the salmon. Salmon are really huge over there. I mean, that's like the king of all fish. But
Atlantic salmon, right? Yeah.
You bet. But the fish that almost all the anglers revere is the carp.
Right.
They really revere the carp. If you keep a carp or a tench or any of those fish, you're considered like the lowest form of scum there is. You got to throw those babies back. I mean, they fish hard for these monster carp. And they don't want them kept. They want them to go back. They got names for these fish.
I went past some ponds, Tim, and I saw little benches around it. And it looked like that was probably one of those areas where you would pay to fish.
Oh, you pay to fish. Yeah. When I was over there, it wasn't that cheap. I mean, you'd have to pay like £20 per rod. And then you'd have to pay another probably £15 for a tag, which gives you a spot on one of those benches. And if you're not in the club, usually there's a club that, you know, operates this thing. If you're not in that club, then you're going to get a tag for the worst bench on the pond. It's just one of those things where you got to earn your keep, I guess. But I used to fish a lot over there. I used to catch a ton of carp and rough fish. I call them rough fish. They're course to them, fish. They're game fish.
Yeah, I would not be interested in paying money to carp fish over there. I'll look into the red stag thing. A non-outdoors observation. I was surprised. We went into some grocery stores, Tim, and I thought food was cheaper over there than it is here. Now, I know you got to adjust for pounds versus dollars. The pound is stronger over there. But even at that, I was shocked. I did my research. I went to multiple stores. I did the conversions. I am convinced that food over there is 10 to 15% cheaper than in the States. And I don't know how that's possible. Don't they import almost everything in that country?
I don't know. You know, I'm not sure how their farming works. I do know that most of the beef comes out of Scotland. And I know that there's a lot of stuff that is grown over there. But I would think that it's not enough to feed an island that size. So I would think that they do probably.
I love the little meal deals that all the convenience stores and grocery stores have, you know, where you get a sandwich, a snack, and a drink for like $5.
Everybody always talks about how terrible the food is in England, and I found it to be my kind of eating. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, you better believe
it. The traditional dishes over there don't do much for me, Tim. I'm not a meat pie guy. I can eat fish and chips for a couple days, and then that's enough. So honestly, by the time we left, I'd had enough of British food, but I'm glad you like it.
I love it. I can eat it, you know, every day. I'm all about it. I try a lot of different things, and the food over there suited me fine. A lot of meat, a lot of potatoes.
Well, we did seafood. You know, there's some good seafood.
Great
we did
seafood.
That. And we did not go to any fast food joints, so we did stick to the local menus. So to our credit, but
here's the thing: you'll find very few Mexican restaurants in England, but you'll find lots of Indian restaurants. And I do love chicken masala.
Okay,
and I do love bambaloo.
Okay. I do not. I don't care for Indian food. Now, my middle boy loves it, and so he wanted to go Indian every night. But you're right. There's a ton of Indian restaurants over there. So anyway, hope to get back and visit my son and his new wife again in the next year or so, and maybe I'll get a red stag hunt in on that too. But
wouldn't that be fun?
Well, thanks, Tim, for spending some time talking about the UK with me.
All right, we'll catch up to you soon.
All right, well, congratulations to my son and his new bride on their nuptials. With that, everybody have a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Gerisine signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.